Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Appreciate you being with us today on the Friday of Week 10. Just a few days removed now from the election, just over a week removed from the Cubs winning the World Series. And those are two of the reasons that we have not had a podcast for you for a couple weeks now. For that, I do apologize. And we're going to look to finish strong and bring some good guests on today. I guess I can't technically call them guests, both Greg Gabriel, our draft expert, and Hub Arkish, my boss and the content director at Pro Football Weekly. They're both PFW employees, but they're not necessarily weekly contributors to the podcast. So look forward to having them on here in a minute. And before I do, again, I just want to thank you so much for being back with us. We look forward to getting you up to speed on all the happenings in Week 10. Greg Gabriel going to talk a little college football, actually, and tell us some of the prospects he's been focusing on. I think he has a bit of a theory, too, on some underclassmen. And then we'll bring Hub in and basically just see whatever is on his mind. I'd imagine we'll talk, certainly spend a minute on the Seahawks and the Patriots. Probably talk a little bit about Cowboys Steelers, see if Hub had any takeaways from the Thursday night game, a Baltimore beatdown to keep Cleveland winless. And that'll about do it for the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So again, thank you so much for being with us. Looking forward to getting things started. Let's bring in Greg Gabriel, Pro Football Weekly draft expert, 30-year former NFL scout. He knows the scouting business and these prospects as well as anyone. So let's bring Greg Gabriel onto the podcast and see what's going on.
Arthur?
Greg Gabriel, what's happening, my man?
How you doing?
I am doing well. Thanks for taking a couple minutes. It's good to have you back on the podcast. What's going on? I guess this is the kind of week where it's nice to have diversions like football, huh?
I guess so. I mean, a wild election. We had the World Series last week here in Chicago, election this week. Bears are coming off a bye, and they look good going into the bye. So, yeah, a lot going on.
Yeah, no question about it. And, Greg, don't worry, I won't ask you to get political or talk about the Cubs, though I think I know where your feelings are at on both of those things. What I don't know is where your feelings are at on some of the top college prospects. So we'll kind of go ahead and dive right in. Greg is nice enough to write for our Pro Football Weekly insert each week in the Chicago Sun-Times and Daily Herald, Northwest Herald. You can find it all over the place. Also a frequent contributor to the website. So, Greg, I'll just kind of tee it up for you very generally. What's piquing your interest coming up in this weekend's college football season? I know the Washington defense has a lot of prospects that you're pretty intrigued by.
Yeah, Washington is loaded. But I tell you, where I want to kind of go with this is, you know, right now we're getting in to the heart of the football season, and that, you know, who's going to be in bowl games, who's going to be in playoffs, who are going to win conferences, right, et cetera, and who the top prospects are. Problem NFL teams have right now, and they really have to do double duty as far as scouting, is they don't know what underclassmen are going to come out.
Right.
And so because of that, you've got to scout all the seniors and all the juniors. Now, the way the draft has gone over the last 3 years, and it'll end up going in that same direction this year, is that your top players are going to come from the underclassmen. Just, you know, who are they? In the last 3 years, we've had an average of 100 underclassmen enter the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And that, while it basically, that's three rounds of players, those guys, all of those guys aren't ready to play. And if you look at the numbers, about 40% of those 100 players, so about 40 every year, don't even get drafted. And that doesn't include the guys who come out, enter the draft, and end up getting drafted a lot lower than they thought they were going to get drafted at, the area they were going to get drafted at.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. It could be what their verified measurables are, character, intelligence, all sorts of things. So, but anyway, right now, and this is a thing I took to the league a couple of years ago, and really they didn't listen to it, is that I think that there's a huge problem with the draft and that there's just too many underclassmen. The number every year should be 45 to 50 underclassmen entering the draft,
mm-hmm,
not 100. And that would, if the number stayed at that, that would benefit the colleges. It would benefit the draft. It would make the draft that much stronger because you wouldn't have guys who just aren't ready to make the jump.
Okay.
And the reason a lot of these kids come out is that they really aren't educated as to what goes on. What is the drafting system, the scouting system? Mm-hmm. And they have no idea. The people they listen to are agents, they're hangers-on, the draft nicks on ESPN or other places, who really don't have an idea of what the NFL teams are actually thinking. Now, you could go back and say, well, they can put their name into the NFL advisory committee and get a grade. Well, the advisory committee kind of hurries their way through this thing. It's not like they get the names late. They don't start getting names from the schools until right about now. So now they're at a rush to put an evaluation on these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always have the top people doing the grade. And when they finally get it, they ask maybe five or six teams to put a grade on a player. And, you know, there's probably 150 names to 200 names that they get, you know, to evaluate. So it's a lot of work to do in a short period of time. And their evaluation isn't necessarily that good. Now, when I was on the committee and I spent 7 years on the committee, they used to give you give the prospect a grade up through the fourth round. They'd send them out a letter and said, you have the opportunity to be drafted as high as the first round. Doesn't okay. guarantee you're going to get drafted
right.
that high. It's just
right.
what they say. Same thing for the second round, third round, fourth round, and then five through seven.
Mm-hmm.
And or they say you won't get drafted. They've changed that 2 years ago. So this will be the third season. And now they just say you have the opportunity to be drafted as high as the first round. You have an opportunity to be drafted as high as the second round or stay in school.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they give you. Now, personally, I think that's a ludicrous way of doing things because the kids need to be educated, know what the process is. And I personally went to the league, it'd be 2 years ago next month, and I told them this. I said, these kids don't understand. They listen to the wrong people, and they need to be told how the process works, what goes into the evaluation process, what are they looking at, is it strictly your football talent, you know, how character plays into it, how intelligence plays into it, all the different variables as far as what the teams look at. And the response I got, and I don't want to mention anybody's name,
right,
but it's a person higher up in the league office, was, hey, if we tell them to stay in school and they don't want to stay in school, screw them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
You know, wrong answer.
Right. They're future employees, and right? Screw them. Let's not worry about them, even though we're going to need them sooner than later.
Right. And I think it would make the draft that much stronger.
Right.
Because the kids who need to stay in school would stay in school. They'd spend extra time developing. And the guys who are ready to go, and it's not just physically ready, it's mentally ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you got a 20-year-old kid who's coming out and he just doesn't have the wherewithal to compete against men.
Right.
Not that he's not physically able to, he's mentally not able to.
Right.
And it's a whole different world. You know, Arthur, you go to practice every day, you know what it's like. And plus it's dealing with things off the field, little things like having to pay rent, having to pay utility bills, having a car bill. And some of these kids have never been put into a situation like that, and they really don't have an idea of what to do.
So before I get – I'm guessing that there are some guys that have kind of got you thinking along these lines, both underclassmen likely to come out that maybe shouldn't and maybe the other, you know, vice versa. But before I do that, short of the NFL actually heeding your advice – and either capping the early entrance at 50 or trying to help these kids get more information, what have teams done to adjust? If we've seen this recent surge in the early entrance, do they delegate a certain part of the scouting department to work on underclass? How does that, do you know what I'm saying? How have the teams made changes to try and maximize their chances of success now that the pool is so much larger?
Well, they have to really double up on their work.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, given an assignment to extra scouts to just scout the underclassmen. When an area scout makes a school call,
yeah,
not only is he looking at the senior prospects, but he has to look at a lot of the underclassmen, especially the top underclassmen, and you know, word around the league, either in the agent community or whatever, to, you know, who may come out, who's thinking of coming out. And a lot of times these, you know, it's guesswork, and so you end up doubling up, doing more work than you need to do, mm-hmm. but it's just the way business is right now. It makes it very difficult. Now you can look at positions. Let's take the quarterback position. And a lot of times, especially in the last few years, the quarterback position is mostly underclassmen. You've got guys who are immensely talented, but because of the system that they play in, they're not really ready to play in the NFL. Now, let's take Trubisky, who numbers-wise had a good game. Talked about him last week, or when we watched him last night, he had two interceptions. That's the first multi-interception game he's had this season. But, you know, he's like the flavor of the week right now.
Right.
But is he ready to enter into the NFL? It used to be an old school thought when you're scouting quarterbacks that you'd want a guy to be a starter 2 to 3 years and have a minimum of 900 throws, excuse me. And when you look at, Trubisky, you know, he's had just over 400 passing attempts in his whole career. This is his first year that he's been a starter, mm-hmm. that he's been a full-time starter. When you look at the numbers in 2014, he threw a total of 78 passes. Last year, a total of 47 passes. And then this year, he's at 350. Very talented guy, but he plays in a fairly simple spread offense.
Mm-hmm.
And he's only been a one-year starter. So is he ready to come out? Now, chances are he will come out because of weakness at the quarterback position, and he's going to get drafted high. And the teams, the problem with that is that if the team takes the guy high, then they feel like they're almost forced to play him too early. Yeah. So we can go back and look at last year's drafting and look at Goff. And Goff was, you know, everybody's favorite to be the top pick in the draft, the first quarterback taken. But he wasn't ready to play in the National Football League. I remember I wrote in the National Football Post early October last year, the guy's got a lot of talent, but he should stay in school. A lot of it was physical. Had a horrible body. And then the other part was, you know, the style of offense he was playing in, what he was asked to do as far as reads, the types of throws he made, et cetera. And he just, in my opinion anyway, was that he wasn't ready. Proved out that I was correct because he hasn't stepped on the field yet halfway through the season. And, you know, if you watched Hard Knocks during the summer, you saw that there was a lot of flaws in his game. There's flaws in the learning process for him. He just didn't have an understanding of complex offenses that are, you know, everybody plays in the National Football League. So, you know, that being said, when you look at the quarterback class, you know, there's a lot of talented guys in that class, but are they actually ready to play? You know, Deshaun, and also they're all underclassmen. You know,
right.
You look at your top five or six guys, you got Trubisky, Deshaun Kizer, Deshaun Watson, Brad Kaya, Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State. They're all underclassmen. And will they come out? That remains to be seen. Are they ready to play in the National Football League? Very few are.
It's tricky, Greg, because it seems like now more than ever, teams are needing quarterbacks. I mean, there needs to be an influx of quarterback talent that seems ready to contribute early. And, you know, maybe Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz, who I know has fallen off a little bit in recent weeks, are kind of more the exception to the rule, as you talked about Jared Goff. But it sounds like you don't think that Goff's I don't know how else to call it. I mean, maybe he wasn't ready, as you alluded to, or not maybe. It's clearly proving it out, but it seems like the situation has become almost embarrassing with the Rams as they continue to trot out Case Keenum. You don't think it's been to the extent that might serve as a cautionary tale for some of these other young guys?
Well, I'm going to tell you, in the long run, the Rams are doing Goff a favor.
Okay.
They're waiting to put him on the field when they feel he is ready to be put on the field.
Sure.
And where he has a good understanding of what they're asking him to do, he can play with a level of confidence. What happens with a lot of these young quarterbacks is they throw them in right away. They throw them to the wolves. They get beaten up. They make bad plays because they aren't ready to play, and they lose confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough to regain that confidence. And then the fans start jumping all over them. You know, they expect the guy to be an all-pro when he's a rookie.
Right.
And, you know, so I think in the long run, this may prove out to be beneficial for the Rams by making them sit and learn. That way, whether it's later this season or going into next season, he could be or play at a lot higher level and play with some sort of confidence where he doesn't have that right now.
Greg, how much do you think that Jeff Fisher's job security plays into what's happening with that decision? Do a lot of other coaches feel, I don't want to call it a lack of pressure, but obviously Jeff has managed to survive with a pretty average record everywhere he's went. Do you think that plays into it? Because it seems like it's such a what have you done for me now lately kind of league for both coaches and GMs.
Well, you know, in Jeff's case, even though he doesn't have the title general manager, he has total control of the franchise. He has final decision when it comes to personnel matters. So in essence, even though they have a general manager and they have a good general manager in title anyway, Jeff is the guy in charge.
Right.
And it really depends on, you know, there's only one person with that designation of control of 53-man roster, on every club. And that guy has the ultimate power in the franchise, and with the Rams, that's him. So this is his decision. Supposedly, there's an extension in the works. It hasn't been announced. If it's going to be announced, that remains to be seen. But if he does have an extension already signed and it's sitting on somebody's desk, they just haven't announced it yet, then he can do this with confidence,
sure,
because he knows it's not going to cost him his job because he's doing the right thing for the player.
And one more quick one on the Rams, Greg. We're only going to spend a couple more minutes with Greg. He's playing sick today, and we really appreciate it. Do you think, relative to the Rams, that Jared Goff is eventually, assuming it is the same coaching structure, Pro Football Week had a way we hear it a couple months ago about some doubts we were hearing around the league about the right coaches to develop Jared Goff. Is that a concern you share? Do you think he's eventually set up for success in that regard, too, from a development standpoint?
Well, I think it's a
huge
concern.
Rob Boris and Mike Groh, if people don't know who's part of that Rams staff. Sorry, Greg.
Right. I think it's a huge concern because they really don't have a guy that has a background of developing quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Right.
They have some guys who are some smart guys who understand offense, who understand football, but they just don't have the wherewithal to develop quarterbacks. Let's go back a year, and they had the quarterback who's at Kansas City now is with the Eagles.
Nick Foles.
He was with they had Foles. Foles did nothing in that offense with the Rams. Now, Andy Reid, who drafted him in Philadelphia and who developed him in Philadelphia, and he played good when he had to play in Philadelphia, he takes him back to Kansas City, and lo and behold, he's playing good football right now.
Right.
And so a lot of that has to do with the coaching, and I think that's what happened with Wentz. Wentz has some people, the people that that coach him, when you look at Peterson and you look at Frank Reich, not only are these guys been longtime coaches in the league, been quarterback coaches and coordinators in the league, but they played the position in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They know what a young player is going through. And so they're not putting too much on Wentz's shoulders as far as what they ask him to do. They're keeping things simple. Does that hurt the Eagles a little bit as far as defensing them and trying to take away things? Sure, but they're doing the right thing for the player, and in the long run, that's going to pay off.
Okay, yeah, interesting stuff, and I'm glad we're kind of on the same page with that. So it will be obviously very interesting to continue watching Goff and Wentz and how that whole quarterback class plays out. Greg, I do want to ask you about a couple Washington defenders, but just quickly, now that you've prefaced all this by saying what a crapshoot it is, who do you have at the top of all these underclassmen quarterback ranking-wise? I know you haven't done rankings yet per se, but who do you think is the biggest upside guy, and maybe who's the best prospect for what looks like the Cleveland Browns right now?
Well, personally, I think DeShone Kizer
is
the most talented guy. Now, has his play fallen off a little bit? Yeah. And as Trubisky says, and Deshaun Watson, he started off slow and has played well in the last few weeks, say last month really. He's played pretty well, put up some pretty good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the system that they're asking for. When you look at the Notre Dame system, it's a very pro-style system as far as what the quarterback has to do at the line of scrimmage, what they ask the receivers to do as far as running routes, there's sight adjustments involved. He has to change protections at the line of scrimmage. He can change plays at the line of scrimmage. So from that standpoint, from a metal standpoint, he's a step ahead of the other guys in the draft. Now, does he make mistakes? Of course he's making mistakes. It's only his second year as a starter. Mm-hmm. And probably from that standpoint, he should stay in school another year because he might not be quite ready to play, but at the same time, from what I understand, he is going to be leaving Notre Dame after this year. So somebody's going to get a good quarterback. I just hope that they don't rush him into the game too soon.
Right. Okay, great stuff on the quarterbacks and the underclassmen situation. Greg, just on the way out, let's very quickly get back to your insert piece, the Washington Huskies loaded defense. Obviously, just a couple years ago, they turned out a pretty remarkable class with Marcus Peters and Kikaha and Danny Shelton. Is this looking like it has that type of talent? And it looks like the secondary in particular has some playmakers.
Yeah, their secondary is loaded, but again, they're all underclassmen. There's only two seniors in that whole group. So who's okay. going to come out? Who's going to stay in?
Right.
But I think they're a team that, you know, looking at the way they played football so far this year, what their schedule looks like the rest of the year, I think they're the odds-on favorite to win the Pac-12. I think a pretty good chance that they're going to be undefeated going into the playoff, and they will be one of the four teams in the college football playoff. And because of that, they've got a pretty good quarterback, but he's only a sophomore. Mm-hmm. But most of their stars are on defense. They've got size, they've got speed, they can sack the quarterback, and they got people in the secondary that can stop the passing game.
One senior in this group, cornerback Kevin King, seems to have great size. It's 6'3", 190. It sounds like you're not sure, though, whether he'll be a corner or a safety potentially at the next level.
Well, it's only because of the size.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've really got to study the player, study his athleticism. Does he have the suddenness that is needed to play? Now, these tall corners, tall, long quarterbacks, they're worth their weight in gold.
Right.
And if they don't necessarily have to have 4.48 speed or 4.45 speed because of that height and their length, but they still have to have fluidity in their hips. They have to be able to turn. They have to have good body control and have to be able to transition. So a lot of that is really just watching a lot of tape and seeing that, you know, they're able to do that type of thing.
Okay. Just a couple other Greg Gabriel prospects to watch out of Washington this weekend in the secondary. Sidney Jones, a junior, one of the better corners in the country, and Buda Baker, a safety, who is playing behind just that loaded cornerback group. So a couple guys to keep an eye on. Some great names here, too. Vita Vea, in addition to Buda Baker. I know I love the names. I don't know much about the players. But, Greg, we'll let you go on that note. I don't know where the 20 minutes goes. We appreciate it. I'd love to get you back on the podcast in a couple weeks for another update on the kids you're seeing because you got so much great information. The time goes by so fast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Arthur, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks again, Greg. Have a great weekend. That is Greg Gabriel.
You too.
Longtime NFL scout in the NFL, our Pro Football Weekly draft expert, and nice enough to join the program today.
And we thank Greg again for being on the program. Lots of interesting stuff, particularly the underclassmen conundrum that faces the NFL. It seems like there is an easy solution there, as Greg kind of alluded to, but I think I can speak for both of us in saying we don't have a lot of confidence that the NFL would take the easy solution, take the common sense solution. They seem to find a way to bungle things further at every turn. So it will be interesting to see how that progresses or devolves, I guess, in some cases. With that, I do want to hand the microphone off next to Hub Arkish, and we'll see what's going on with Hub on this lovely Friday.
Hello.
Hub Arkish, our next guest on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Hub, I'm calling you a guest. It's really your world. We're all just living in it.
Well, that's nice to hear. It's good to be back with you. Hopefully getting ready for another great weekend of games.
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely some interesting ones on the docket, and we'll get to a couple of those in a minute. I'm curious, though, did you get a chance to watch any of that scintillating Thursday night AFC North battle? And if so, your thoughts on the Ravens, who suddenly are atop the AFC North and seem to have figured some things out, at least defensively?
Yeah, I watched enough to know I didn't want to watch any more. and I understand that the Cleveland Browns think they have a rebuilding program. I sure don't see it. And I think it's fair at this point to question the alleged brilliance of Hugh Jackson. I just don't get some of the things that he's doing. You know, they badly overdraft Cody Kessler, and then they're running Kevin Hogan on the field for God knows what reason. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know if it's the owner's fault or the mistake he's obviously made with DePodesta and Sashi Brown, but I think the Browns are in for a longer run of futility. As far as Baltimore, I don't think we can make too much of it because they're playing the Browns. We know the defense can be pretty good. We know the offense is a huge problem, and everybody has done business against the Cleveland defense. So it's just unfortunate, this whole Thursday night football thing. I don't think it's just a fluke. It seems like the league has gone out of their way to schedule one bad matchup after another.
Yeah, I would agree, and it sounds like we might have tuned out of that game right around the same time. I saw the bizarre decision to run Kevin Hogan out for the Wildcat for one play, like you just mentioned, and then I had tuned out before Cody Kessler was apparently eventually benched. I will say, have you seen anything to build on with Cody Kessler? Not to pretend he's the answer to the long evasive question of who's going to be the long-term quarterback for the Browns, but I think I might have undersold him a little bit. You see anything to build on there?
Well, I mean, he's a decent body with a decent arm. I think that he should have been a fifth or sixth round pick who might eventually be a quality backup who they badly overdrafted. You know, right. Do I see him as a potential starter or franchise quarterback? No, I haven't really seen anything yet to suggest to me that there's that kind of talent there.
Hub, let's talk about some games with a pair of starter franchise quarterbacks. I'm just going to cut right to the chase. Let's get to the primetime slate. Well, actually, I guess, what do the Cowboys and Steelers meet in the late afternoon slot, I believe, Sunday? Nonetheless, I'm going ahead and calling Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback. I'm not even sure you're there yet, but tell me what excites you about that matchup, one team rolling and the Steelers really in need of breaking whatever's been ailing them here in a hurry.
Yeah, Dak Prescott is a great rookie quarterback who is probably already the rookie of the year and is even in the conversation for MVP, but he's not in the conversation yet for franchise quarterback. There's a long way to go with that. You got to wonder even if he'd be having this kind of year as a rookie without Zeke Elliott and the best offensive line in football. So I'm going to knock on it. It's a great story. You definitely keep Tony Romo on the bench right now. And Prescott is exciting and intriguing, but I don't see the arm talent for a franchise quarterback, and I haven't seen any adversity to overcome or a lot of the other things that we need to see before you put them in that category. As far as the Pittsburgh Steelers, you look at three games without Le'Veon Bell suspended. You look at Martavis Bryant gone all year long. You look at Roethlisberger then going down and having the scope on his knee. I understand, why they're muddling along at 4-4. I did expect them to be at least more competitive, if not a lot better, when Roethlisberger came back last week. I think maybe this week is when that happens. You cannot criticize what the Cowboys have done in any vein. They're the best team in the NFC right now. They're going to win that division. They're going to be in the playoffs. They most likely are going to end up with a bye. But I still don't trust that defense being good enough to win playoff games. And if, in fact, Roethlisberger just needed a week to get back to being Big Ben, this looks like a playoff game to me with the Steelers in pretty much a must-win situation. So in Pittsburgh, again, they fooled me a few times already, but I expect the Cowboys' defense to struggle more this week than it has to date. And I think this may be where the win streak stops.
And the Steelers could get a little bit healthier. It looks like Ladarius Green finally ready to make his long-awaited Pittsburgh debut. Sammy Coates probably a little bit healthier. They're still trying to figure out what they have, as you mentioned, in that passing game, obviously without Martavis Bryant, next to Antonio Brown. So that will be interesting. Hub, just quickly a follow-up on the Cowboys defense, which, as you said, has kind of just been You know, it's exceeded expectations given what it's had to work with. It now knows for sure it will not have Randy Gregory for any late season potential boon to that unit. I don't even know if that's something they were thinking was a possibility, but he has been suspended now for a year. Just your thoughts about Randy Gregory. Really, you could throw the last two second-round picks by Jerry Jones into the conversation. Which one gets on the field first, Jalen Smith or Randy Gregory, or neither?
Well, when Randy Gregory wasn't suspended last year as a rookie, he wasn't a very good football player. So, to me, he's not even part of the conversation. I love Jalen Smith if the knee comes back. I can't guess at that. Nobody can guess at that. That's why he was available where he was. I think it's pretty well documented by people who follow Pro Football Weekly. I will never be accused of being a Jerry Jones fan of some of the things this organization does. But I was excited enough about Jalen Smith before the injury that I can justify gambling the second-round pick on him. Of course, the question now is when, if ever, is he ready? I think as far as where this team can go this year with his defense, Rod Marinelli is a hell of a football coach. He's done a great job with them. But they just don't have the talent to be a playoff-type competitive dominant defense. We'll see how far they go. And I think the second half of the season is really critical to watch that aspect of their game.
Well, about the 500 teams or kind of the middling group that has made a recent surge, whether you're talking about New Orleans or Miami, some other teams that have come on kind of strong, who do you believe may be able to turn it into something that's still viable come January, if anyone? The Panthers aren't 500, but at 3-5, they've shown some signs of life. I guess basically I'm asking, who do you believe in that surged recently that may be able to have an opportunity to take the next step as soon as Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we're only having this conversation because the Steelers are 4-4 and the Packers are 4-4. Right. Vikings have dropped 3 straight. I don't think any of these teams. I mean, you're talking about the Dolphins, you're talking about the Chargers, you're talking about the Saints, you're even talking about the Ravens, who, I think could make a run to 9 or 10 wins, but I don't see it. The one team who is in this group but should be rated higher is the Panthers. This is a team, even though they're 3-5, that is the defending NFC champ, that 3 years ago was 1-3 and won 11 out of 12, that 2 years ago was 3-8-1 and won their last four and snuck into the playoffs at 7-8-1, but then won a playoff game. They're the team to keep an eye on. I was looking at their schedule the other day. Obviously it's very tough, but if they win 7 of their last 8, 10-6 almost always gets you in. We don't know right now. To me, they're the team to keep an eye on, particularly because they've got a really interesting test this weekend. Kansas City is probably the second-best team in the AFC right now, and they're going to get Alex Smith back. They're going to get Jeremy Maclin back. They're going to get Spencer Ware back. That was all predictable. They've only been down for a week or two, but they're also, I think, going to get Justin Houston back. And if he's anywhere near 90 or 95 or 100%, that's a big deal. So I think one of the most interesting games of the weekend is Kansas City going into Carolina. There's two reasons. Well, there's a lot of reasons, but there's two significant reasons in my mind that Carolina fell to 1-5. One of them was that pass rush, that interior pass rush, that interior presence against the run last year was the best in football. Early this year, for whatever reason, came on short. Starlo Tulele, the first-round pick, Vernon Butler, they weren't giving him anything. Last right. couple weeks, they have. Starlo Tulele had 3 sacks in the game a couple weeks ago.
Right.
If they get that back, suddenly that secondary looks a lot better. I think they may have. The second problem, however, is that last year the offensive line, such a huge question going into the season, was one of the best in the NFL. Has not played well this year, still has questions to answer. If the offensive line gets back to where they were last year, Panthers are more than capable of making that run that we're talking about.
Yeah, and you could actually throw kind of a previously no-name guy, Mario Addison, provided a lot of pass rush for the Panthers last week. And I wrote these same things. You know, we've seen them go on these just white-hot streaks in the past. But as Hub mentioned, the upcoming schedule is certainly daunting. After hosting Kansas City, New Orleans comes to town, and then they hit the road for a pair of cross-country trips to Oakland and Seattle. San Diego after that, so in Atlanta, obviously still another divisional game later in the season on Christmas Eve Day. So it is going to be a really tough putt for Ron Rivera's group. But the fact that they've at least seemed to refine half of their equation, that pass rush Hub mentioned, is good. Not so good. Ryan Khalil still banged up. Michael Orr still banged up. And as Hub said, Justin Houston returns to the Chiefs, we believe, Sunday, saying he's ready to dominate. And in his absence, that Chiefs group has been pretty good, at least against the pass. Dee Ford has been playing terrific. And obviously they have a lot of playmakers in that secondary. So that will be a fascinating game. Hub, let's just spend a couple more minutes looking at some of the other interesting ones. I don't know what jumps out to you. I'm holding the best for last. We'll talk Seattle, New England here in a minute, but I think Miami, San Diego is interesting. Certainly Minnesota, Washington, very interesting. And Denver, what do you make of what's going on with the Broncos right now? Their run defense having issues, and they got to go into New Orleans, a tough putt for any team, especially one that hasn't had a lot of offensive success of late.
Yeah, even with the win streak, New Orleans defense is still so bad.
Terrible.
That I wouldn't make anything out of this except for the fact that it was just 2 weeks ago that they knocked off Seattle at home, 25-20. You know, and I think right now Seattle and Denver are very comparable teams. You know, when you look at the way their offenses are struggling, their defense is still great. You know, when I can get the defending Super Bowl champion who is still in control of the first wild card spot. Well, they're not even that, but they're in control of one of the wild card spots, even though they're not leading their division, getting points as an underdog on the road against that New Orleans defense. I got to like them, but I'm just not a Trevor Siemian guy. I think he's no more than a backup. Devontae Booker's a nice-looking rookie, but that's all he is at running back. It's a really interesting football game. You know, I think that Denver wins it on pedigree because I just don't believe in that New Orleans defense, and What the Saints are living and dying on now is that young wide receiver group. There's no team in the league right now. There may not have been a team in the last decade or two that has been three deep at cornerback as much as the Broncos are.
Yep.
So the place where, you know, we still think of that Seattle secondary as the group a couple of years ago. But at this point, it's really more about Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. You know, Cam Chancellor's okay. They're not special on the other corner. And so, you know, they couldn't handle New Orleans 2 weeks ago. I think Denver's a lot better suited to handle them. I suspect that the cream rises in that game. I think Miami and San Diego is interesting because they're interesting stories, not so much because of any, you know, playoff ramifications or anything like that. I think they're two teams that are hard to separate right now. Their young people are starting to play better on both rosters. Clearly the Chargers get a big edge at quarterback with Phillip Rivers. And as much as Jay Ajayi had those two big games, Melvin Gordon's the guy who's more believable to me right now, a former number one pick who seems to be coming into his own. And Joey Bosa looks like he's going to be what they thought they were getting, you know, with the third overall pick. So with the Dolphins having to go coast to coast, even though it's easier going right to left than left to right, I think you probably have to lean towards San Diego in that game.
That is a fun sort of matchup, just sort of a subplot between Jay Ajayi and Melvin Gordon, guys that many of us were maybe too quick to write off, and yet another cautionary tale while it's ridiculous to write off these guys just early in year two. But Miami will certainly be up against it, trying to keep Jay Ajayi going Sunday. They could be without both Kenny Stills and Jarvis Landry, and San Diego is really playing some defense all of a sudden. Well, the Tennessee rung it up on them last week, but that might have been a little bit deceiving. I think overall San Diego is a much improved team. Hub, just a few more minutes here. Let's just cut right to the chase. Seattle, New England, first thing that comes to mind for you, aside from the instant classic and the Super Bowl, for me, it's the way the Seattle defense has been taxed of late and now how it has to go to the mighty Patriots on a short week.
Well, not only how the Seattle defense has been taxed a little bit, but the running game, you know, Pete Carroll can claim it's okay all he wants. It's not okay, you know, and it's not just the mirage of the numbers, because one of the things that you need to understand, Russell Wilson has averaged over 560 yards a season rushing the last 2 years, went over 800 yards, I think it was 2 years ago, either that or last year. Right now, he's got 54 yards on the ground, so it's the halfway point. And so he is just delivering the 20% of the production he's had in past years. That's always inflated the numbers of that Seattle Brown game, no matter how good Marshawn Lynch or Thomas Rawls were. They don't have that right now, and that's a problem. They've also got a bad offensive line. You know, you can call offensive lines mediocre. Sometimes they're a problem. That can be true. This offensive line isn't that good. This is a bad offensive line so far. They're hoping Jermaine Ifedi becomes a really good player. A couple other kids that they're trying to work in, develop. But right now, they're just not very good. And bad offensive lines don't travel well. The New England Patriots are the best team in football right now. They know what these big games are all about. And so I understand why they're a touchdown or more favorite. And I think they'll probably live up to that. You know, all of that said, it's going to be a blast, you know, seeing Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas try and match up with Gronk. But I think what is setting the Patriots apart right now, you know, beyond Tom Brady, which is obvious, is people who aren't paying close attention don't realize what a good year LeGarrette Blount is having. And the fact that the Patriots, last I looked, were third in the NFL in run-pass ratio in terms of balance. And so, you know, it's not just Brady to Gronk that they beat you up with. You know, they still got Edelman and Amendola, and yet Chris Hogan's been a really nice addition. And they haven't even benefited yet from the double threat they can really show you with Martellus Bennett and Gronk. And obviously Bennett's ankle has something to do with that. So, you know, it's going to be a great game. I do think that the Seahawks come with the hearts of champions. They'll probably play one of their better games of the season. But everything in this one, to me, points to New England.
Yeah, Hub is right. Certainly aside from Brady's first game back when Gronk and Bennett both went off, it has been a little quiet since for Martellus, but boy, they're not short. You know, they're not starved for weapons. Chris Hogan, the way that they have gotten that deep passing game going, that's what's maybe been the most remarkable about Tom Brady. He's been almost perfect since coming off the suspension, and the way he's doing it, driving the football down the field, has been really a sight to behold. Hub, just on the way out, I don't know if I should do this or not, and if you want to pass, I'll give you the opportunity. Bill Belichick, he has stunned me twice in the past 2 weeks, first with the Jamie Collins trade, then with a letter to Donald Trump. Do you have thoughts on either of those interesting moves by Belichick?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Jamie Collins trade, I think you can certainly argue either way. It caught me by surprise. I think he's an outstanding football player, but what the Patriots have always been pretty good about is identifying cap problems before they hit you. Right. And what he is saying, it's not that he values Dante Hightower, Jabal Sheard, and Malcolm Butler more than Jamie Collins talent-wise. Mm-hmm. It's that he obviously sees a path to retaining them more than he does, keeping three of the four if Collins is one of them. And Collins has already said he wants silly money. And yeah. So at least in this regard, he got himself a third-round pick in the 17 draft instead of hoping that he would get one in the 18 draft. You have to remember, you only get these compensatory picks for the free agent signings if you don't go out and spend that money elsewhere. And now he's not hamstrung needing to do that to get the pick back. So, you know, whether I agree with it or not is irrelevant. I get that there was a real rationale for it. As far as the Trump letter, I go out of my way not to, you know, put my beliefs and feelings on other people. I'm a rare guy in the media. I've got a little bit of a relationship with Bill. I think the world of him personally. I have tremendous respect for him. And, you know, I was tremendously disappointed when I heard about that. I understood it a little better when he did explain he didn't expect it to be read. As I read his explanation, he said he didn't necessarily even vote for him. But nonetheless, you know, there's no way to answer it without sharing some of my beliefs. I believe that our president-elect is an absolutely despicable human being. And so, yes, I was disappointed when I heard about it.
At least he owned it, at least initially. It was in his opening remarks. He knew it was coming. I'll give him credit for that much, whereas Tom Brady hit the podium a few minutes later and deferred to Giselle when he was asked about his political views. So, hey, and then here in Chicago, Jay Cutler said he's been supporting Donald Trump for a while, pleased with the election results. So it has been interesting and a nothing if not interesting and terrifying week to kind of hear from some of the NFL's bigger figures on the matter. So, Hub, I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, Arthur, one more thing real quick, because I said I wasn't going to go there, and I went there. I want to make sure that people understand, because it's become such a divisive and negative and you know, concerning time for all of us, because when you say which side you're on, everybody else wants to go to war over it. And so I just want to be clear to our listeners. I think that our president-elect is an absolutely despicable human being. I don't think that of any of you who disagree with me. You know, right. And I think this is where this whole thing gets lost. You know, so I understand that. I'm not saying I'm right. You know, people should follow their hearts and do what they believe. But this is the one subject when we talk about this. I'm not talking about the politics of it. I'm not talking about liberals and conservatives. And I'm not talking about Hillary Clinton, who certainly comes with her own baggage. I'm just saying, relative to this man individually, I don't understand how anybody could consider him worthy of the greatest office in the world. I am not in any way picking a fight or looking for problems with liberals or conservatives. And the only way we're ever all going to come out of this is if we can all understand that and find ways to talk to and respect each other. And I certainly hope that somehow we get moving in that direction soon.
Very well said, Hub. And again, I kind of I put you in a corner there. So thank you for saying things as respectfully as you have. You did it on the radio earlier this week in Chicago, too, a very powerful segment. So, yeah, we're not, you know, we have very clear opinions on this, but we think above all else, this is a time where the country needs to become unified and not further divided. And hopefully our words haven't suggested anything otherwise. So we're going to leave it at that, Hub. I really do appreciate it. We got to head to start taping the Pro Football Weekly radio show here in a minute. So I'll catch you on the other airwaves momentarily. But thank you again so much for being on the podcast this week. We'll look forward to doing it again next week.
All right, and in fairness to you, obviously I didn't have to take the bait. I obviously was happy to take it. So we'll talk hopefully about better subjects, and everybody will feel better about each other real soon.
All right, sounds great. That is Hub Arkish. Thank you again to our content director, our publisher, editor, our fearless leader at Pro Football Weekly, and that's going to do it for this podcast. We will be back with you next week to break down all of the best from week 10 and look ahead to week 11. Thank you so much for being with us, and enjoy your weekend.